Australia is burning right now, which is a terrible, terrible tragedy. And some are blaming this on climate change. For example, recently, actor Russell Crowe said from Australia, his native Australia, he basically mentioned climate change during a speech in which he received an award. And his spokesperson at the event, Jennifer Aniston, on his behalf said this, quote, "Make no mistake, the tragedy unfolding in Australia is climate change based," end quote. Again, this is a huge tragedy. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And right now we're basically going to look at that sentiment, which is often stated. Is that true? Our guest is Gregory Wrightstone. He is the author of a book called Inconvenient Facts, and basically takes on, from a scientific perspective, the whole thesis of climate change, man-made, catastrophic climate change. Greg, thank you so much for joining us back on the program. I appreciate it.
Oh, good to be back on with you. And I think the bottom line is that it appears that Russell Crowe actually went to less school than Greta Thunberg. At least he didn't go to history classes, because what we know of Australia's history is it's a long, long history of fire. And we can explore that through our conversation this afternoon.
Okay.
It's not quite as easy describing it.
Yeah. And by the way, isn't it true that this particular, the new fires that are, you know, right now engulfing so much of the country, apparently 200 people have been arrested for arson?
Yeah, and again, the reporting on that's a little bit, we can talk about that. That's been, I believe, overreported.
Oh,
They've been charged. A lot of these people, it wasn't actually arson. Some were charged with careless disposal of cigarettes and fires that they had allowed to get out of control, that they had were burning things when they weren't allowed to. But there have been a large number of pure arson there. You're right about that. As I got into, and I have a lot of connections down under, it's a large climate skeptic community down there, and talking with these people, there are a lot of, we'll call them conspiracy theories about who it is that's setting the fires. You know, there's anything from environmentalists that are doing it to actually spark the world's indignation over climate change. There's even one conspiracy theory running around down there. It's actually pretty prevalent that there's a Muslim tie-in from Islamic terrorism actually lighting, and there have been some Islamists that have been arrested. So this will all sort out over the next few weeks who these people really are, the true arsons. But yeah, that's one of the components when we look at forest fires and bushfires. There are three things you need to have forest fires. Number one is the fuel load. You need fuel, you need arid conditions, and you need an ignition source. And in a lot of cases, all three have been exacerbated by man, but it doesn't look like it's climate change related.
Huh. Okay, tell us about fire in the history of Australia.
Yeah. So what we look at here, the first people that arrived in Australia were their Aborigines, and when they first arrived on the continent nation, before it was a nation, they brought with them fire, and it's believed they've transformed the entire continent of Australia from what was probably a well-forested, possibly even a lot of rain-forested continent, to one of grasslands. They brought fire. They used it early, often, and regularly for a number of uses. And they just basically torched the entire island. And it transformed. And during that time period when the Aborigines first arrived, it's thought there were quite a few extinctions that went through, because if you were a plant or an animal that couldn't tolerate regular fires, you would go extinct, and that's what happened with some of these, including something known as a giant wombat that went extinct, and a lot of others that couldn't tolerate this fire. In fact, whenever Captain Abel Tasman, Tasmania is named after him, first arrived in 1642 to Australia, as he landed at different places around the continent, on his logbook and in his journal, he noted that just about everywhere he landed, he saw either recent fires or evidence of fairly recent fires. And there was always smoke on the horizon. And again, these were the Aboriginal people lighting fires, and they used the fire for various reasons. In some cases, for hunting, they would light a fire and then wait for the reptiles or marsupials or others, mammals, to escape the fire, and they would catch them for food. In other cases, one tribe would, or group of people would light a fire, was going towards another group, I guess they were battling with, and then that group would backlight another fire to protect themselves. And but that's really the story of Australia, is this long, long history of fire. And then whenever the Western settlers arrived, they were mostly ranchers and farmers, they continued this burning practice. And it's only really been in the last, several handful of decades, 50, 80 years, where they've gotten away from these burning practices and clearing practices, because the Australians know that you need to control the fuel. Well, otherwise, these fires go from what otherwise would be a low-intensity grass fire, when you get a lot of fuel, trees, eucalyptus trees and the like, large brush, it then becomes a high-intensity fire that's extremely dangerous and gets away from them. So what we've seen here is, over the last several decades, the fuel load, forests and the like have not been thinned like they had been in the past. They've been thinned in the past through grazing, through mechanical, just cutting them down and clearing the brush, and also regular use of fires, prescribed fires, to clear this out. And the other thing that's very impactful and very meaningful here, I looked at the Bureau of Meteorology for Australia, and if you can go there to their precipitation page, and there's a chart there, a chart of precipitation by year for the last 100 or so years, and you can see that for the last several decades, there's been a steady increase in precipitation. Now, remember, Russell Crowe and his allies blaming it on climate change are saying, oh, well, climate change is causing drought and heat wave, when just the opposite has been apparent, that precipitation's been slowly and steadily increasing year after year. And what that's then done, too, is fed this fuel that brush and the like have been building up due to the increasing precipitation. It is true that this year, 2019, we saw
last year,
it was probably the hottest and driest year of the last 100 years. So now we've got all this fuel building up, and now you got this heat wave and dryness, and it's just, you know, just takes a spark and there it goes.
So wait, it help me to understand this, because I remember talking with someone else about California and the fires and so forth, and they were making the point that in previous generations, before really the modern environmentalist movement, it used to be the policy to go ahead and clear the brush and mm-hmm. actually have occasional planned fires in certain
yep.
places
yep.
so that the fires that would happen wouldn't get out of control.
Yep.
And they don't do that anymore to protect the environment, and yet look at all these animals that are dying now because of these fires. Of course, they're blaming it on climate change. But no,
it's failed policy. In fact, in California,
wow.
a report just released this week for Governor Gavin Newsom, the lead researcher there stated, and I about my jaw dropped when I read this, he stated that he believed that fire was just as integral part to a healthy forest as was precipitation. Think about that. I think people are starting to understand. You just can't be blaming this on climate change. The true blame is in our forest policies themselves. And in California, it's the United States Forest Service. I think it's approximately half of California's that's fire prone is controlled by the federal government. And remember, during the Clinton administration, there was all the clamoring about old-growth forests and spotted owls and the like. And they thought, in Australia, just as California, the environmentalists thought that a forest that was left alone just to allow nature to run its course was a healthy forest, when in fact that's not quite the case at all. In California, the Native Americans also set fires. If you look at the first early photographs, the plates that they used to take these old photographs, it looked a lot different than it does today. If you look at it today, it's complete forest in some, it's the same place the photograph was taken. Back then, there were open grasslands with large patches of trees, and that's because these fires would come through. And if you look closely at the photographs, you can see that there aren't any branches on the trees up until you get up to maybe 20 feet or so. And that's because these low-intensity grass fires would come through and would knock off the bottom limbs of the trees, burn them up, and but the tree itself would survive. Today in California and in Australia, like we're seeing now, you've got huge fuel load that's much more high intensity, and that's completely consuming forests now. So that's the thing. If you control in Australia and California, if you control the fuel, you control the fire. And on my blog post that I posted, I had a guest essay commentary there from Viv Forbes, a contact I have in Australia. The title of it was "Fighting Fire with Fires," and he went through. It's a really interesting read of the history of the Aborigines and the fire and the early settlers and what went through.
Let me give you a website. It's inconvenientfacts.xyz, which is based on the title of your book. But go on, sir.
Yeah, and if we look, drought is, so we've talked about this, the fuel load. It's, again, control the fuel, you control the fire. I was on an interview yesterday, and the host said, well, Greg, if they made you emperor of Australia, what would you do?
Yeah, good question.
And I said, well, right now I'm going to do what they're doing right now. Fight the fires, put them out, save lives, save people, save homes. Do the most you can to knock it back right now. Police the forests and the bush. Try and catch anybody and stop any from lighting new fires. But then the real work as emperor would come, not now. Well, that's a hard work now.
Yeah.
But the valuable work will come in the coming months during the wet season when we recognize what the problem is. We recognize that we let things get out of control. We recognize that we need to, again, own the fuel and knock it back. And there'll be things you can do: reestablish grazing, knock the grasslands back, mechanically remove things, a bush, thin the forests, eucalyptus in particular that the koalas love. It's a very oily leaf, and it just goes up like a torch. And so it's the canopy fires, really, that are the high intensity. Now, the canopy, the higher part of the forest and the trees. In the past, again, in Australia, from what I understand, like California, the lower parts of the trees didn't have many. It was kept back, and it wasn't allowed to burn up. So, again, we'd have low-intensity fires that might sweep through. But now we don't have that. We have that, and when you get into the canopy fire with these eucalyptus that goes up, these things go up like bonfires and torches.
All right, we have 40 seconds left. Big picture, here's a quote from Michael Oppenheimer associating climate change with this problem. This is really a window into what global warming looks like. It looks like heat. It looks like dryness. It looks like this kind of disaster. Your concluding thought on these fires and so-called man-made climate change.
Now, if they are lying to you and your listeners about forest fires in California, Australia, and the Amazon, and it's documented, if they're lying to you about this, what else are they lying to you about? That's what I would like to ask people.
Wow. Inconvenientfacts.xyz. Thank you, Greg. Appreciate it. Appreciate
Thank
your
you.
Time. Okay. Bye-bye.